Welcome to our series on social capital. My name is Tristan Claridge, and I'm the director of the Institute for Social Capital. And I'm joined by Lyndon Robertson, Emeritus Professor of Agricultural and Resource Economics at Michigan State University. Welcome, Lyndon.
Thank you, Tristan, and welcome to our viewers and listeners. We're glad you joined us.
Lyndon and I share a passion for the concept of social capital, and we each have a long history of work on the concept. However, we have different perspectives, Lyndon, from economics, and my background is in sociology and social theory. Certainly our different backgrounds and perspectives make for some very interesting conversations and engaging debate. In this episode, we'll discuss the nature of capital and why social capital is a form of capital. And certainly capital has certain characteristics, but how does this relate to the particular form of capital that we're talking about, which of course is social capital? So, Lyndon, as an economist, you're probably well placed to discuss this issue. Let's start with what the characteristics of capital actually are.
Well, as an economist, we think of capital as a potential to supply resources and services that enable the production of goods and the construction of other forms of capital. And capital rarely works alone. There's non-durable inputs that are used along with this capital resource that represents a potential. There are characteristics of this resource. It lives someplace. It exists someplace. It can be augmented or depreciated. It can be transferred, usually. So there are characteristics of traditional forms of man-made capital that we generally associate. But there are many forms of capital that, as people have said, well, this is a potential to supply services and goods and make more efficient other production methods. We list other forms of capital: human capital, natural capital, financial capital, community capital. In fact, the words associated with capital, the titles of potential resources, has become somewhat large, actually.
Yeah, it certainly has. I mean, as a non-economist, the simple way that I think about it is that it is something that we can invest in that produces a stock, if you like, or a potential to produce future benefits or returns. Is that consistent with an economic understanding of capital or your understanding of capital?
Yes, and of course, lots of different social sciences have capital-like concepts, and surely economists aren't the only ones that claim to be the keepers of the concept of capital. But I do think that one of the perspectives that we introduce is that capital generally represents a stock, something that exists at a point in time that over time produces flows of goods and services and their maintenance expenditures and reinvestments. And so we typically view capital as a point in time, such as, for those with a financial background, a balance sheet compared to an income statement. One is stock, another is a flow. So if we take that perspective, then if we're going to associate something with the term capital and social, and assume that it has the properties of other capital, we really are requiring that it be considered a stock at a point in time.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty easy to understand why social capital is a stock that is capable of producing future benefits or returns. When we develop relationships, when we build trust, when we develop norms, goodwill, solidarity, when we establish foundation of what a relationship is, we can easily understand that that has future benefits and returns. So at its core, the idea of social capital is consistent with capital then.
Yes, and I think if I had a goal, it would be that we could come to an agreement as social capital scholars that if we're going to call whatever this is social capital, that we agree that it does represent a stock that affects that is a social stock, suggesting that the stock resides in people and in relationships, which would be different than residing in an institution or rules and norms and so on. That at the heart of social capital is a stock of resources that exists in people, networks of people, and affects flows of goods and whatever those goods are between people, and can affect other things.
Yeah, and so as an economist, you would say goods, whereas as a sociologist, I would say actions,
Sure.
perhaps. But I think we're talking about the same thing here. But unfortunately, not all of the meanings or definitions of social capital are consistent with this potential stock-like nature of capital. Some authors have claimed that capital in social capital is a metaphor. But I've honestly been always a bit confused about what is a metaphor for. It's like capital, but it's not capital. Do you have any insights into what they might be talking about?
Well, I think as we identify different potentials, for example, one of the early really important works by James Coleman was on human capital. And we recognized, and he recognized, the potential skills and abilities inherent in a person and humans to do things. And that's clearly, in my mind, a potential that resides in humans. If we think of other forms of capital, man-made capital, that's people put together, they invested resources in something that now is a stock capable of delivering actions and services and so on. So I'm not sure. In my mind, capital has to be a potential. If it's not, if it's something that's used up in a moment of time, then it's not capital. It's a non-durable input or something equivalent to that. So,
Yes. So perhaps these authors who are saying that social capital is the capital, social capital is a metaphor. They're not saying that it's not a potential. They're not saying it's not a capital. They're just perhaps they're saying that so that anyone who takes objection to it, the narrow definition or an older style definition of what capital is, could perhaps see that, well, this is has many of the same characteristics. It's capital-like, but it's a little bit different. And it certainly seems like the meaning of capital, or at least what we say is capital, has changed over time. You know, if we go back far enough, then capital was really owned by the capitalists, the people who owned the means of production, you know, the factories and so forth, and were able to use that for their own future benefits and returns. But then we started thinking about human capital and how everybody, the workers themselves, have a potential that they can invest in and they can produce a future benefit or return for themselves. And so it wasn't just the capitalists that could invest, it was also every worker could invest in themselves. And then we expanded that further to natural capital and then to social capital as well. And at every step, the meaning of capital had to be expanded or changed a little bit over time. As a non-economist, I'm not clear on exactly what those changes were, but some of them seem to be things like the ability to transfer perhaps that capital. perhaps was less able to transfer that capital. When we think about social capital, it's quite difficult to transfer social capital from one individual or group to another. What's
Difficult,
your understanding?
difficult, but not impossible. For example, my wife's father had a very good friend who was a jeweler, and when it became clear that I was going to propose to his daughter, he said, "Go see my friend, the jeweler, and tell him that you intend to marry my daughter." And so he had social capital that resided with his jeweler, and I was able to access that through him. So we can, I think, in some cases, make others the beneficiaries of our social capital, even though they may not be direct. So, and the idea of who owns social capital and where does it reside? I have friends that I think I would say I'm the object of their social capital and the beneficiary of lots of their services and doors that they open for me. If I This afternoon, I was stuck on a problem dealing with risk, and I sent an email off to a friend of mine who is very, is a good scholar, and he was able to provide some support. So how we actually access these beneficial results, this potential that resides in other people, I think there are procedures, there's lots of things to study about how we access our social capital, that my social capital resides in other people who are concerned with my well-being. So it's an interesting relationship that describes how we use and where it lives and so on.
And certainly, some authors say that social capital exists in relationships and it exists between people. And they almost seem to suggest that it exists in thin air, that it doesn't particularly exist anywhere. And if that's the case, then it's difficult to say that's a form of capital because, as a form of capital, it needs to be a stock. It needs to exist somewhere. It needs to have a potential. And we need to be able to see where it is. But the idea that it exists in thin air is strange to me, because as you pointed out, it really exists in people. And even Jim Coleman, years and years ago, identified that it ex our my social capital exists in the people I know, my friends. That's where it is. It's what they think and feel about me that is the potential for them to help or care or share or whatever the potential benefits and returns in future. It exists in my friends. So we can be quite specific about where it exists, and it certainly doesn't exist in thin air.
And sometimes we I've had an interesting conversation with an anthropologist friend of mine, and we talk about and they seem to be interested in things that reflect relationships. For example, when we give a gift or we make a commitment and we extend something that reflects that, or we join an organization and wear their pin or adopt their symbols. The important point is not to confuse those with social capital because they have meaning and significance because of their connections to people with whom we are the object of their social capital. And so I think we need to be careful that we don't associate symbols and objects and treaties and rules and norm with social capital itself, but being the creation of social capital.
So it'd be fair to say that I have a car, I might loan it to a friend, but that doesn't make the car social capital. It's still physical capital, even though I've shared it with my friend. So then what we're saying is what social capital is that potential for me to loan the car, not the car.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. And social capital can be used for a lot of things. To you can lend your car, you can share a recipe, recommend a good book, comfort someone in a difficult time. All of the wonderful things that we often see going on in relationships are simply drawing on this stock of what we call social capital that somehow makes my well-being important to you. I think if I were to say what makes social capital social is that our relationship is something more than arm's length. It's I care about what happens to you, and you care about what happens to me. And because of that, what we do and how we trade and what we're willing to do is different than if we were simply in an arm's length market where the only object was to accumulate things on favorable terms.
So let's get into how does one invest in, how does one maintain social capital, how can we use this potential, or how is potential used? We've kind of touched on these issues, but what's your interpretation of that process, the investment, the maintenance, the use or depreciation?
So, I'm going to, this will reflect my economic background, and you may want to give the alternative view. But we talk about goods as something that satisfies a need. And if it doesn't satisfy a need, then it's probably not a good, not really important. So, in a relationship, when we produce something that satisfies a need that changes the well-being of the object of our exchange, then we say we have invested in this relationship or social capital or whatever makes your well-being important to me. So I think you would refer to those as social acts. I would say they're social acts delivering something. I call them relational goods in other settings, and we'll probably that discuss that in future terms. But whatever happens when we shake hands, hug, greet each other, invite each other for dinner, any number of ways, whatever happens that increases our sense of connection, our concern for each other, we're exchanging something that invests in social capital. And when we neglect relationships or maybe take a competitive point of view, we're probably disinvesting in whatever this resource is. But whatever is happening, it's a dynamic process. And social capital at one point in time is not likely going to be the same thing at a later point in time.
And I guess it does also depreciate, because if we don't use it or maintain it, we don't continuing having those interactions with our friends, then that potential perhaps can diminish over time. And I guess we can use it, but this is perhaps one of the arguments that's come from people saying, well, it's not really capital because you can't use it up, which I'm not sure is really true of what capital is in the first place, but often the use of social capital reinforces it and makes it stronger again. So there's certainly some processes there that are perhaps a little bit different than some of the other forms of capital.
So when we talk about relationships and we talk about what underlies relationship, we often talk about what is it that we have in common that allows us to exchange these goods that and perform these social acts that build social capital. And sometimes they're earned, such as where we work and where we live and do our children go to the same school. Sometimes they're inherited, like native language or genealogy, gender, and so on. So some social capital has a very long life and is almost you can't extinguish it. How do you get rid of a kind of a crazy uncle or something? He's still your crazy uncle or something. On the other hand, people at work, you move away, you don't have much contact. And without that continual exchange of whatever these relational goods are, eventually that social capital stock may become not very important. Other kinds are, I've still got to look after my, relative kind of thing.
Yeah, and so some of it can appreciate over time. Like I think about my best friend from high school. I haven't talked to him in years and years and years, but that social capital hasn't depreciated. And the reason is because I hold that with certain regard that I don't necessarily hold other people I knew in other in different social settings in the same regard. And so that's appreciated. Whereas somebody I worked with at some job I worked at 20 years ago, we no longer work at the same place anymore. We don't have that commonality. Therefore, there's not sentimentality, or there's no other attachment to that particular relationship, and therefore it's almost certainly depreciated over time. And so social capital is complex, I suppose, in that way that it doesn't necessarily diminish with use. It often would be increased with use, but we could talk about that too, because if I try to use social capital, like take advantage of my friends, then clearly the stock of potential benefit is decreased. So it is quite dynamic, and it is quite complex, and it does function in different ways in different contexts.
There may be two points to add here. If the exchange of these, this relational good or whatever it is that's being exchanged, it can vary in intensity. I'm thinking of two, let's say, soldiers who share life and death experiences and come to depend on each other in a very significant way. That's different than giving someone a ride home. And those kind of experiences will be more intense, more important, and have a longer life. So there is an intensity. The other point about social capital that acts on its dynamic nature you referred to is that is if the relationship is asymmetric, then I may be able to take advantage of someone who cares more about me than I do about them. And if that persists, we may be driven to a kind of symmetry in our regard for each other and balance out. But again, we could be in different positions of resource, mother and a child, and so on, that we may not expect symmetry in the relationship, but maybe over time it will change.
Yeah, certainly. So social capital then really is a bit different to other forms of capital. And one of the things we've just identified is that it's not just the presence of social relationships, it's also a whole lot of other meaning and emotion and attribution that we have as individuals towards those relationships. You know, my friend from high school, that relationship won't depreciate over time. Whereas another one will, and the difference is just purely how I feel about it. And that can be a challenge, I guess, to see social capital objectively as something that's very easy to measure and observe within society. But that doesn't mean that it isn't still obviously a form of capital, as we've come to agree on.
And there are different means for maintaining social capital. For example, we all have friends and family that are deceased, yet there may be symbols that connect us, such as photos and symbols and organizations, colors, events, hometowns, and so on. And we, these symbols are kind of like a cupboard full of goods that we can draw on to reconnect, even though physically we may not be in the same place or even in the same time. So there's lots of ways, and I think it's a fascinating discussion of how we maintain our social capital. Just how much social energy do we have? I mean, how many really close friends Can you have it one time? You have a close friend in high school, but my guess is not the entire, not all of your mates in high school were your close friends, or we wouldn't have time. That yet we may connect through other ways. And I think that may be one of the reasons why social capital is such a ubiquitous concept, that people say, yes, you're kind of describing what I'm trying to understand, and what I'm feeling exists is important, and we'll continue to work on it, even though we may not have a precise, ironclad definition of what it is.
Yeah, I think that's I completely agree with that, and perhaps it's the reason why the concept is so incredibly popular, that so many people perhaps feel like the importance of relationships has been diminished or overlooked increasingly in modern society. And so they say, well, we're interested in public health, so clearly relationships are important in determining the nature of health. So they become attracted to the concept of social capital as a way to illuminate or explain or explore that the importance of relationships for the particular outcome they're interested in. But then at the same time, because they're interested in public health, they might define social capital in a way that is consistent with both their discipline and their understanding and what they think that it does. And as I think we've just been discussing, if we can cut through all of that, we can see where the similarities lie. And if we can then come to agree on those core principles of what social capital is, it will help everybody to be able to understand and apply the concept better to whatever application they're interested in.
I think what you're describing is really important. If we allow everything to be defined as social capital, then nothing will really be de definable as social capital. And so I guess my hope is that through these discussions, and surely through our discussion, we've tried to emphasize, well, what are the core concepts of social capital, so that we can focus on these and try and make progress, and not include concepts that are valuable, important, but belong in other definitions and other concepts and application. Because social capital can't be everything. If it is, it won't be very useful.
Yeah, I agree completely. That's all we've got time for this episode. This is exactly what this series is all about, is exploring these kinds of issues and making progress on the core aspects of what social capital is and understanding the concept and how it can be applied. So thanks very much for your time, Lyndon. Look forward to the next episode.
Good to see you, and I'm grateful for a chance to really get into this concept that both you and I find so important.
Thanks, Lyndon.
Bye bye.